Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in Sensitive as the New Strong with Miss Anita Morjani. And this is, I think, is going to be a two-parter as well. This last couple episodes, we really talked about money. We really broke it down. And I really encourage you to go back and take a look at that, because it's all about, you know, money is energy, and it's something that really can be something that shows us we're on the right path. So there's a lot of little clues and ahas about it that can really be something that helps us to really feel good about what's happening with our lives and be able to say, yes, please bring me more. So that's always good. So tonight we're going to be talking about saying yes to the saying of no. And it says, it's okay to love myself enough to say no. And boy, I know Amy's got something really good up her sleeve. So, and go ahead and get my co-host. This is Amy. How are you tonight?
Well, I don't know. Wait, yes, I do. No, I don't. I don't know.
I was expecting some kind of a recorded animated thing going on there. Okay.
Well, maybe next time.
Okay, that's good. So what did you think of this chapter?
For me, this is the you I used to be a long time ago. So It's really getting myself into that space of supporting people that are in the space she's talking about. That's a very old me. I'm not there anymore.
Is it uncomfortable to go back and look at it?
It's just like watching a movie of who I used to be.
Okay. Okay.
So not good or bad, but you have to, you know, say I've had, you know, lots of training, education, experience since then. You know, I was in my first marriage. It looked perfect. Everything looked perfect. But I worked full time. I went to school at night pretty much full time. I made sure the house was perfect. Everything was perfect. And if you needed anything, of course, being a good empath, I made sure it was there. And if I didn't do it the perfect way, there was hell to pay. And nobody really knew what was going on. I got sick on a regular basis. When things didn't go the way he wanted, I'd get slammed up against walls. So at that point, I read the book, Pulling Your Own Strings by Wayne Dyer. And that really changed everything for me. And then working on my education and being successful at work, that's why I became a work addict. Relationships, I didn't have any power, but I did at work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'm kind of the same thing. You kind of wake up one day and realize what. I think for me, some of this, because it's interesting the way a lot of these things do really can feed into addiction. And for me, I wanted to go into codependency, with the supports of, dealing with somebody who's an addict. So I think it really helped me to look at it from that perspective, too. So that was one of the turnarounds for me, was being able to look at that. So it says, opening to our divinity means honoring the divinity within us. It can be challenging if you're anything like I am, which is Anita. She said, I suspected you were troubled saying no, even though you really don't want to. And it's not all empaths are having trouble turning somebody down, but it's common for us because we sense the feeling that those around us often feel that the emotional needs of others are stronger than our own. While an empath's love for being of service is a good thing, when you are asked to do something, even though it's something that you wind up feeling like you don't want to, you wind up regretting the fact that you didn't feel like you had a choice to say yes or no, because you basically wanted to have that person feel like, you wanted to please them so you could feel good.
And I don't think it's across the board that, empaths or do that, number one. But number two, they probably do it with certain people more than other people.
Yeah, and I think it's actually more intimate relationships or ones that you've had longer. Because I think that's something that really, if we get into that, yeah. Go ahead.
You're afraid of losing. So I want to go back up a bit and then talk about the mantra that she has for this chapter. Mm-hmm. This is chapter 9, saying yes to saying no. And the mantra is, it's okay to love myself enough to say no. which I don't know that I necessarily think is right. So I guess we'll just dance with this. It's just not my feeling that that's necessarily an accurate thing. You know, because I think there's times when it's not about love, saying yes or no. Is it appropriate in my life and makes sense? And I think we've talked about this before, but in my observation, and there was some study, and I don't remember it at this point, but they talked about how when you say no to a person, it can ignite their reptilian brain because the reptilian brain thinks it's going to die if it gets a no. Something that I've been working on, and I'm a highly trained negotiator. That's what I did for the Department of Defense. I mean, very highly trained. I have like a master's degree in it. So I think a lot of that is learning how to be a negotiator. And one of the most important books for me was the book Getting to Yes. And so it wasn't about the no. It was about the win-win and how do you get to yes, not stopping at no. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I went through some self-leadership, and that was the one core thing that was just the framing of everything that we learned as a sense of helping myself to see who I really am was about there's always the win-win. Yeah, and so I think that's really helpful when you can look from that perspective and being able to move that. So, you know, does that look like something when you're saying yes or no? I think it's a matter when you say the win-win, you're always putting yourself as a part of, you know, the scenario of how this is going to look for everybody. You know, I can be authentic. I can be true to myself. I can say how I feel, but yet I'm really interested and I want to know how other people are seeing and feeling about it because we can move it to a different place, a different level.
And again, but not looking for approval. So it's a real
delicate it's not
dance.
A matter of approval. Right. It's a matter of just saying, I want to understand how, because I think there can be more than one right in the room. I think everybody
Correct.
Can have their own truth and what's true for them. But when we can come to more of a universal truth, which I think there are those things in the world that exist as well, that we can even move it to something that all of us had not even considered, and then we all look at that and go, oh, wow, yeah, it can be that.
Well, and as you know, an organization, right, and maybe as a family, right, like if you're trying to decide on a family vacation, that you have to come to some kind of agreement. Or, you know, as an organization, you know, here's our mission statement. How do we get there? I think one thing that's really a really good litmus test here that she says, are you saying yes out of a real desire to say yes? Or are you saying yes because you feel you should be saying it to fulfill your duty or obligation?
Or to make sure that they feel good so you can feel good. Still an underlining thing for impact. You know, have a sense of like, you know, we're having an agreement, you know, it's all agreed to be able to move something forward. So, yeah. And Anita goes into talking about a relationship.
Sometimes that it isn't necessarily moving forward. Sometimes it's about terminating something and renegotiating or negotiating. It's changing the relationship or changing right, the organization, or changing who's doing what.
Yeah,
because
she talks to you about
forward. But you know what I'm saying? It may not feel like you're moving forward, maybe.
Yeah, when we're subjugating our needs for a long time, though, it talks about how you can get to a place where it will, this is the sense of subjecting yourself for a long period of time to help fulfill the needs of those who don't care about your needs are leading to resentment and anger. And there was a study back in 2013 in Harvard that talked about how they saw an increase of people who bottled up their emotions that created premature death from all kinds of courses. It was more of 30%. And they also showed a higher risk of cancers because of the suppression of that. And, you know, there's hopefully it'd be interesting where we'll see where we are now that we're over, you know, 10 years past that, 11 years past that.
Right.
Now. Really looking about understanding that suppressed emotions is basically, you know, making you sick, literally, in the being able to see that. And you know, along with that, too, is looking at the different dynamics of what you make okay, you know, knowing that empaths need to have more time alone and more physical space and quiet environments, more like a sanctuary. When you have other people around you, depending on, you know, depending on your significant other, whatever. And they, you know, they did not, but not about boundaries, and they're all about noise, and they're all about, you know, just all these other kinds of things that don't seem to balance with yours. And making that those kind of behaviors okay for you, even though it's something that really doesn't take care of you in the long run. You know, you're basically making environment not work for you.
Right. I want to throw some stuff in here to kind of, you know, play with a bit. So, like with you, you know, having the flower shop, owning the flower shop, having employees, having customers, having suppliers come in and out, how do you have the time that you need and the space you need and acquire an environment within all that?
There's times when I basically will go to the bathroom.
Yeah,
a bathroom can be a sanctuary of, like, I close the door, people figure I'm busy, and I'm busy, and you could do, you know, some breathing exercises or wash my face and hands and have that be where, and washing my hands and washing away any kind of stress that I basically have been dealing with and helping myself to be in a new place of being centered. So, you know, sometimes I choose to take a flower delivery so I can be in the car by myself.
There you go.
So I can create quiet time, you know, or I go run an errand, you know, I'm in the car or whatever. So it's
a really
you
good
find
point.
Ways. Yeah, you find ways of being able to just, I'm still, you know, getting things done, but yet I'm doing it in a place where I have my own space and it's quiet for a little bit and I have minimal interaction with people and I'm basically, you know, I'm in and out and just keeping it minimal. That's what was nice about COVID for me, because I still could be in a place of working and interacting with people, but yet it was masked and gloved and interacting when I was with other people. But yet in my car, I could basically be myself and have it to where I didn't need to be masked or gloved, you know, that kind of thing. So it's minimal with coming to interacting with people. So it helped to be way more functional that way, but still being respectful to where we are with, you know, the different, you know, regulations and stuff that was out there at the time. So I think that just really helps you to know that, you know, you need to know yourself. You know,
yeah,
what works for
right.
me and what do I need for myself. So I think part of it's just seeing your different things that you have. And like I said, if it means just going to the bathroom or whatever and just having work to do that. You know, I spend a lot of time in the morning, and then at night I go to bed early. I'll go to bed at least an hour before I really want to go to sleep, and I'll just have that be my reading or my meditating or whatever that I do. Same thing when I get up in the morning. I go to bed early enough that when I wake up in the morning, I'll have an hour or two that I can basically meditate and stuff before I get up. So I may be
That's
awake,
right.
but that doesn't mean I'm really just jumping out of bed. I'm making sure that I have downtime and I have reflection time, and I may listen to meditations and stuff that help me to be in a place of, like, centering where I am. Because, like, you know, I listen to a really good, I think we'll put it on the Transformation Cafe community on Facebook. It was a really great YouTube that would talk about different things as an impact that you can do to help yourself. And one of them was, you know, being in nature and being quiet and journaling and all these different kinds of things. And, you know, there's such a thing as, you know, mirror genes that we have, that we're actually hyper genes that we have, that when it comes to looking at other people, you know, it's more of an intense thing for us.
Right.
And it's just, you know, the way that we're built. So it's good to know that, you know, it's not just, you know, think, oh, that's just kind of weird or whatever. I'm like, no, physiologically there's differences. So it's a good thing to be able to understand that and know that that's something that we're dealing with.
Mirroring neurons. When we see somebody
right,
in
the
pain.
Mirroring neurons. Mm-hmm. Right.
We
and they're more sensitive
we're not
and hyper. They can,
we do it.
Yeah. Yeah. They can be hyper.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
you just
it's
have to kind of know that.
Become aware of, and don't be careful about those images or putting yourself in situations where you ignite it at a point where you can't function.
Yeah, and I think
so
you need to be able to be being sensitive to yourself to understand that, you know, oh, this is triggering me, and whether that means.
So what
I
want to support, you know, right, and I want to support people, you know, who are listening to this, that what they do is like our example. Like for me, it's interesting you say the bathroom. I used to work for a 3-star general who was very demanding, and I literally would have to go into the bathroom to get away from him. And he would still send people in there looking for me. But I'm like, no, I'm, you know, and though we had a couch in there, so I didn't have to necessarily be on a stool in one of the stalls. But it was like, I have to go away because it's too much. It's too much. And again, there's nothing that can't wait 10 minutes, but I have to take that time. But also when I worked for the Veterans Center, and there was a lot of stuff going on with employees, but there was also a lot of stuff going on with people coming in crisis. And so there was a park across the street. I don't know if you remember that. And what I would do is we'd have meetings where we'd walk and talk. And so instead of sitting in office, we'd go across the street to this, it had a pond and it had, you know, ducks and that, and, you know, so we would have our meetings while we were walking and talking. And that got me out of that environment and put me into an environment where I could still work, but I was doing it in a way that served, you know, my highest good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And just says if we're around someone who doesn't understand empaths and won't honor our needs, we can lose ourselves in an attempt to keep the peace, sacrificing our needs, and then we're going to get in trouble. If we're with someone who their needs are very different than our own fundamental needs, maybe it's like a together for 24/7, love to socialize, love to have background noise, love constant conversations, it will be tough for us to basically, you know, even go to a party. If you need to recognize and respecting that these differences can go a long way toward creating healthy and workable compromises. So it's like, I'm willing to go to the party for a half an hour or an hour, and let me see how I am, and then I'll go. I'm sensitive, but my husband's even more sensitive, you know, when it comes to even the idea of going to something like that. He looks at me like, I'd rather, you know, cut my arm off or something. He doesn't want to do that at all. So, you know, and something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go. And then we'll go for about, we'll say we're going to, you know, we're going to eat, and then we'll just see how it goes or whatever. You know, we'll create a potential out. Yeah. We'll create a potential out, or have a safety word or whatever, you know, that we like it and like, you know, yeah, you know, we have that thing, you know, how that people say that. But anyway, so it's that kind of a thing. But, you know, along with COVID, it's been so interesting because people have really had that go to more of a sensitive hyper mode about the fact that, you know, they might have had tendencies in that way, but yet the fact of not really engaging with other people at all, that they, you know, it basically really gets activated. Because with my husband, he's been at home for over 2 years now working, and so I really have to get him out on the weekends. And he's had a hard time with that because I literally go out of my way to not even stay in our town. I drive somewhere else. Like,
yeah,
we're going out, I'm driving at least a half an hour one direction before we would come home. And as soon as I hit about 5 miles, he gets nervous. I can see his body language, and he just goes, oh, okay, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm like, I always try to pick someplace that he would look forward to going to, or there'll be an activity or something that he enjoys. So, like, we're going somewhere that makes sense. Because once we get there, we'll have something fun that we're going to engage in and do or whatever. And so it will be a pleasant experience. But, yeah, getting and coming there could be something that, you know, in his head, he's got it that way. And he's actually been better about that because I wound up yelling at him about it.
I have the complete opposite. My husband is the biggest extrovert, and all the energy you can muster. So what I strike a deal, again, there are times when I'm like, I really can't work up to going to this. You know, you need to go. And then there's other times I'll negotiate that, all right, I'll go. I need you to find me one or two people that I can go hang out with and have a connected conversation while you flit all over the room, because I can't handle that. You know, we can't do that, I need to not go.
Yeah, he's a flitter. He likes to flit.
He's a flitter. Yep. That's right. He doesn't need a stranger.
He's got all these great stories, and he wants to make sure that, you know, everybody knows about them. Which they're great stories, but once you've heard them once you've heard them 50 times, you're like, yeah, I think I can move on. It's okay.
So they talk about the relationships we want to steer clear of are those that are the primary concern is themselves. Narcissists are especially attracted to us because they see the true self behind the mask. They show the world and want to love and nurture that person, and they desperately want that unconditional love and nurturing. But the minute we cross them, disagree or find fault, or do anything that threatens their shaky yet inflated sense of self, we can lose ourselves completely to avoid their disapproval and the withholding of their affection. Can I get an amen on that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So when two empaths come together, the heart connection, mutually understanding, and the ability to feel what the other is feeling can also result in deep soul, profound relationships. But the downside is these partners pick up on their other partner's emotions and physical distress. So it's like, you know, heightened, you know, I'm already feeling heightened and I know you're freaking out. So this is really not a very comfortable situation. So it's all about, you know, relationships being spiritual connections that need to be treated with love and understanding. And also, you know, it's extremely important that empaths and their friends express their needs in ways that they can honor one another. And, you know, that's one thing I found with people that that I'm being able to be real and be sharing with them. And I think a lot of it's just showing appreciation to people, I found, is a really great way of being able to feel connected with people, especially people that I'm working with. You know, it's not uncommon for us to go around and all compliment each other when somebody's done something or whatever, and just saying, you know, wow, that was a great job, or I appreciated this or that, whatever. So I think it's a way of being able to kind of tune into people and see how they feel, and it helps them to feel like they can be that much more empathic with you when it comes to my sense like that. I saw a quote the other day that said, joy is the simplest form of gratitude.
Mm.
And when we're coming from a level of appreciation and joy and just seeing how people can make our lives, and it's just those simple things that you're grateful for every day. You know, I'm grateful for my electricity. I'm grateful for my water. I'm grateful for, my husband making me pasta. I'm grateful for, the grass. There's so many things to be grateful for. Then, you know, we get caught up in just all the different things that would pull us away from that and lower the energy. So it's something that really, you know, be mindful about. And it's a practice and it's a choice when it comes to those things. We always talk about that. And people are like, oh, you're so happy and you've got this and that. And it's like, yeah, it's a choice. I choose that.
Absolutely.
I choose that over getting overwhelmed by something, you know. I choose to be, you know, let me slow this down and be grateful for this moment and what's happening. Be in the now.
And you're recognizing, you know, what's happening, and you're recognizing, you know, your own feelings. That doesn't mean that you can't be happy. That you also,
right,
you know, you're happy because not only the choice, but you're doing the work to acknowledge what's really going on and addressing that and dealing with that.
Right, right. So one of the biggest triggers that comes with a lot of these things when it comes to connecting with people and wanting to make sure that they're happy is guilt. And it's one of the primary reasons that we basically subvert ourselves to others. So it's feeling that disappointment when somebody is let down, when we've let somebody down, and it's consistently weighing on us as being the wrong thing. So a lot of it can be just in our own heads about, oh, gee, I don't want to disappoint somebody, when it's a matter of, like, what really works for me. Anita wound up talking about a friend of hers, Tanisha, that basically she was a young mother who had kids, and she was unmarried. And she just saw how, she really wanted to start dating again and having a little more of a personal life. And so she went out of her way to help her to, you know, watch her kids and have a relationship with her. But over time, she started resenting it because it was a matter of Tanisha not really seeing a give and take of, like, you watch my kids, I watch your kids, you know. It was more of a needy thing. And she said, you know, we attracted needy people to make us feel comfortable that have no incentive to change the situation. So it's a matter of being, you have to come to a place where you have to be willing to confront somebody in a loving way about, you know, hey, it just seems like I'm watching your kids a lot more than, or you never even watched mine, or being able to say something in a way if you're having this relationship with the person and not getting so caught up in the fact of, like, gee, they're not going to be my friend anymore. And the bottom line on that thing when it comes to friendship is Anita had to get to a place where she actually, you know, after her near-death experience, she ended up losing people because she realized that, you know, she said, death finally cured me of that affliction. She said, I lost many friends, including Tanisha, because I no longer was willing to sacrifice myself. So it's really interesting how we think we're nurturing these relationships, but in the long run, we're actually, you know, sacrificing ourselves and our needs and what really is fair and what makes us happy.
Well, I think that's why it's so important to do, you know, codependence work. And, you know, if you haven't done that, you know, look at the book Codependence No More and do some of that work, and maybe even go to, you know, a codependence, you know, group to help yourself with.
Yeah, there's actually even just like daily reads that you can do for codependency that are just nice little reminders of, you know, proper relationship and things to be grateful for. And Melly the Baby actually has gotten a new one out that's basically heart-based when it comes to that, of looking from heart for gratitude and moving past the dysfunction, which is actually a really wonderful book. So that's her last one that she actually wrote about.
And having done that work, you know, for me, guilt doesn't work. You know, I was raised by a mother who's really good at guilt, and I kept getting in relationships with people who were really good at guilt. And so I really worked hard to really face what was really happening and not be caught up in that tool. And that's a tool that narcissists use to control us.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
But not getting yourself so caught up in not being guilty that you're doing all kinds of other behaviors. Does that make any
mm-hmm.
sense?
Yeah.
So it was like, how do I be true to myself? How do I be a good person and a kind person, but not be looking from so much approval from anybody that I sell my soul in the process?
Yeah, because, you know, you can get to this place where you have resentment that
mm-hmm.
can really build up when you're not in this place, and it turns into what can be triggered, because she says, you know, after things would settle down with somebody, depending on what her situation she had with Tanisha, but she said, you know, she would be the one apologizing for just being frustrated and having it be a trigger that, you know, she was just so done with feeling like she was being used. So, you know, the original issue never really got resolved. It was a matter of apologizing and feeling guilty for the fact that, you know, you had exploded even though you were trying to share your feelings. So it's about, you know, it says this patterns of resentment exploding and guilt doubling down seems to be a standard issue for many situations. And finding ourselves in this type of lose-lose situation is commonly an occurrence for empaths. It's just, it's what a crazy way of life and expending your energy. I'm like, boy, is that true that you would, you know, do that stuff to yourself. So, you know, how do I move past that? And that's going to be our next show, is like really working with that. So we really want to take some time to unpack it and really talk about how these things can benefit you. But, you know, it's important to be coming from a fearless place. And I wrote it down in here, you know, it's about being able to have loving confrontations about this is how I'm feeling. You don't necessarily have to do anything about it, but it's really important that I want you to know how I feel about this. And it's like learning how to be able to have that languaging and being able to express it that way. And then having it where you can have this kind of being able to being in fearless less. So being in fear less. So instead of feeling like you have to be in the fear place of what's going to happen and they're not going to like me or whatever, it's letting go of that fear. And being able to be true in how you feel about something, and being able to confront somebody in a loving way. Some people kind of, why does it have a loving confrontation? Is that such a thing? It can be. It can be. What do you think of that?
Why don't you say that again?
Being in a loving confrontation. What do you think of that?
Well, I hate to say, you know, I'm having a conversation with my husband right now. I'm trying to be on a podcast, and he's back here making all kinds of noise. So, yeah. So I'm very frustrated.
Fear
and
fearless,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, I want to kick some ass is what I want to do. So, the bottom line is learning, I think we want to look at, are there codependent behaviors that I have? How
mm-hmm.
does guilt affect me? How do I know
mm-hmm.
when I'm in power and when I'm not in power? But being
mm-hmm.
in authentic power in a kind, loving way.
Yeah, and really asking yourself, you know, I have the need, you know, the need to have everyone feeling good around me before I can feel good. Do I do that? It's like watching your behavior and just seeing,
right.
you know, what's your motivation for why you do what you do? And seeing what that would be. And one of the other great books that we have is Byron Katie's work. It's called
mm-hmm.
The Work. And there's all kinds of YouTubes out there that really help you to question about, you know, is this true? Is this, you know, what I have going on? So I would really encourage people to take a look at that as well, too. So that's kind of going to be kind of the homework for this episode, is start kind of just watching, you know, be the witness of your life, be the witness of the way you're interacting and your motivation for why I do what I do, and do it, you know, is it based on everybody else being happy before I can be happy? And that's a big trigger. That's a big, big marker for where it is. So, and it's important to realize, you know, don't wait for another person to change, because they're not going to change. There's no incentive for them to change when we're not changing. So we need to be knowing that.
We want people to be happy. We want people to have a good life, but it doesn't have to be at our expense.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and you can definitely tell when you've got healthy relationships, you know, it's questioning yourself about whether you have a good relationship or not. If it doesn't feel right, then odds are it's not right. You know, and if you're afraid to address it with that person, then odds are the relationship itself is not right for you. If you can't be in a place where you can really ask that person and have a healthy conversation, then it's not a good relationship.
Right. And I want to leave on this note, and I don't know if maybe you want to read the meditation so people can play with that this week.
Okay.
But something sure. People will say to me, well, they have such potential. And people get into relationships and stay in relationships because they're waiting for potential. And what my definition of what potential is, they ain't done it. If you're waiting around for that potential, you're always going to be waiting around for that potential.
So this meditation for saying no says, you may find yourself whispering these words to yourself on the fly while finding the courage to say no. I honor myself for turning in to my own inner guidance. I allow myself to say no without guilt. Saying no does not make me a bad person. On the contrary, it makes me a more authentic person. Letting go of all that is not me, I allow me to set myself free and fully embrace the me who finally emerges. Just say no.
Amen.
So next week we'll be going through seven different keys that will really help for being able to look past the guilt. And really encourage people to go over to the Transformation Cafe podcast over on Facebook and just kind of share anything you have coming up with just these levels of awarenesses that you might have coming up and ways that you really realize that I'm so glad to be an empath and to be appreciating all the gifts and talents that I have and not having that be something that limits me. So it's all good. It's all good.
Woo-hoo!
So thank you. And as always, want to thank our audience for joining us. Thank you for all your thoughts and ideas. And we just love you. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.